everyone, and welcome to the Final Femme Podcast. I am your host, Jack, with co-host, Sydney.
Hi.
Sydney. How's it going, Sid?
Good. How are you?
I'm great because only an hour and 21 minutes of my life was wasted watching this.
Normally, I give you shit about that, but on this movie, I will agree with you. It could have been 30 minutes shorter. I know. Mark it.
Is this Sid's rule?
No, this is only for this movie.
58 minutes.
No, okay. No. Just this one time.
Yes. We watched The Blair Witch Project from 1999.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, man. This movie was a product of its time. That's all I can say.
Yes.
Now, Sid, did you see it at that time?
No, I didn't see it at that time. And I kind of wish that I had because I watched it for the first time last year, I think, just on my own because I was curious. I was like, oh, this is kind of the thing that, like, kicked off the found footage. Like, it's the granddaddy, whatever. But, boy, product of its time, you aren't kidding, because the pacing's weird, the script was weird, and I just ended up wanting for it to be over. I was like, God, I don't care.
It's insane because this met my rule far below
it. Yeah, definitely.
And it felt long. Watching it, I kept checking, like,
How much more?
So, yeah, that's my kind of my initial reaction of like, yeah, I think I agree. This probably would have been better seen in a movie theater during the hype.
Yeah, for sure.
There was a lot of marketing behind this that, you know, hinted at that it was real or whatever.
Yeah, the marketing went crazy for this movie.
So really, I think that's the best part of this is like the marketing for this movie. That did so much for this movie and made it go so much further than it. Because I could see this just like coming out and like not even getting any attention at all.
Yeah.
And some other movie takes its place. But it did spark a huge genre of the found footage because that's like
Paranormal Activity, Hell House.
Thank you. Jesus.
Yeah.
There's no activity going on in my brain. Hell House. Yeah. That really – Hell House made me – It made me think of Hell House, which probably drew inspiration from that. But
yeah, anyway, can see a lot of the ones that like took inspiration from this. And I think that's great. So like I do want to make sure we recognize for its time and for what it kicked off. It's not innovative, but like it deserves its place in history. How about that? But watching it now is not as much fun as it probably would have been in 1999.
And I don't know about you, but I knew the ending to this. Having the ending spoiled, there's not a lot of payoff for it.
I didn't know the ending, and I don't think there was a lot of payoff for it. So.
Well, I guess either way then, okay.
5 minutes of scary, and you're like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so this movie was directed by Daniel Myrick and Eduardo Sanchez, written by Daniel Myrick and Eduardo Sanchez. Also, Heather Donahue, who was one of the stars of the movie. Three main stars. Yeah, Heather Donahue, Joshua Leonard, and Michael C. Williams. Thank God I don't have a huge cast to like.
No, you got lucky with the cast. It's just a couple people.
Yeah, this is nice. I like this. This movie came out July 30th, 1999, and the budget was $60,000 estimated.
I'm surprised it was that much, honestly. It looks like it was a $10 budget.
Yeah, it's kind of nuts. I don't know where that money came from. I guess maybe the actors got paid that much, but it probably was like a paranormal activity where like the people got paid like $5 and then never saw any money after it. I don't know, but.
Well, I was going to ask you about that just because the people have got paranormal activity got so screwed if that same thing happened to Blair Witch, because Blair Witch came out first.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, there is other ones after this, which I didn't really look into. So I don't know if they like come back. Filming location was Patapsco Valley State Park in Maryland. So it does actually take place in Maryland.
Okay. I'm wondering about that.
So that shot on location. So opening weekend, U.S. Canada, was $1,512,054.
Definitely just made their money back.
Absolutely, just right away. This is insane. Gross U.S. and Canada was $140,539,099.
Really?
Gross worldwide, $248 million.
Well, damn. Okay. Yeah. I can see why there were sequels.
Right.
I think it goes back to your marketing thing that you were saying, like, because I know there were websites trying to figure out if it was real and all these like conspiracy theories and stuff.
Again, it's like.
So it was a good tactic.
It is. And it was like the perfect time. I was like, the internet's like you know, not new. Necessarily new, but it's definitely like in that period where people are still kind of figuring it out and like,
yeah,
finding these forums or these message boards where people are like, oh, you hear about this movie where people died in it?
It's a snuff film, bro. We got to go see it.
It's a sniffle film, as we'll get to.
We'll get into it.
Ugh. Okay. Okay, Sid. I hate to do this, but taglines. Okay. I can't. Well,
let me pull them up.
That's not the tagline, people.
Audience, I know. I forgot.
That's how the marketing got you. No, their main tagline was, it's literally the text that starts the film. In October of 1994, three student filmmakers disappeared in the woods near Burkittsville, Maryland, while shooting a documentary. A year later, their footage was found. That's the tagline.
Which is a little wordy. One?
Well, there's other ones, but that was the one they used.
That is very wordy.
And Sid, what's your favorite tagline?
Well, I had them pulled up beforehand, obviously, because I'm professional. Scary as hell is kind of funny. It's a comedy. No, they're not good taglines.
It's a found footage comedy.
The scariest movie of all time is a true story. That's not bad.
Yeah, I think everything you've heard is true because that plays on the marketing. That would have been another good one. But it also implies you were paying attention to all that leading up to it.
Yeah.
Some of these other ones had to have been written. Well, scarier than The Exorcist, dumb. That's a dumb tagline.
Mm.
You should never put another movie in your tagline. Then it like makes it agreed. Of that
That's
world
subjective.
Nah. The worst one though, because this really dates it, says before Cloverfield, there was the Blair Witch Project. Cloverfield came out in 2008. So
yeah,
are they
that
like
definitely was
rehashing taglines? Like, oh, this will get them back in the theater.
Got him. Like, oh, okay, you got me.
So, yeah, either the scariest movie of all time is a true story or scary as hell or everything you've heard is true. I could have seen that as like a good tagline.
Yeah.
The text from the film? No.
Right.
I don't think so.
It's like, okay.
So I guess we should probably say what this movie's about. It's honestly, we don't have to because the tagline explains all of it. Three film students vanish after traveling into Maryland, forced to film a documentary on the local Blair Witch legend, leaving only their footage behind. It's literally, yeah.
That is the movie.
So,
ta-da!
Ta-da! Insert screams. What I want to know, Sid, is what kind of screams did John make when you last heard from him?
That's very personal, Jack, and frankly, none of your business, to be honest with you.
It's kind of my business. It's at least half of my business.
Well, Jack, as you know, this is very hard for me to talk about, but...
Keep going.
Keep going. It is difficult.
Wow.
I know. It's very difficult. I'm very choked up. John helped us produce. Well, John did produce. I know what you did last summer. And he got really invested in, you know, the idea of being a working man and not a blue collar man. He didn't want to like be a shill for corporate life anymore. And I was like, I can respect that, even though I don't really know what he actually did for work. And so he decided to become a crab fisherman, but he didn't really fit in with the local company. Like, you know, he just kind of couldn't shake his douchey corporate ways and the boys at the docks didn't like him. Unfortunate. And one day they heard a box, like a big, big box, like clicking and rattling. And they're like, that's so weird. We haven't seen John for his shift and that box is making a noise. So his boss went and opened that box. And they found a ton of crabs in there, and they were just scuttling and chewing and chomping all over John's corpse. So rest in peace, John. It was a terrible way for you to go. I'm so sorry.
So he like literally fell into the...
Into the pit of despair / crabs, yes.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Very sad. But he lived, or he died how he wanted to live, eaten by crabs.
He had crabs. Well...
Anyways.
That's definitely a way to go. And like you said, you know, it's better to die a blue-collar worker than working behind a sound mixer, like a console. Like, that's such a white-collar job. So, I mean, he did live out his dreams in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess, I mean, like, we got to have someone, right? Like,
we do, yes.
There's
sorry.
No John, I mean.
There is no John, but we do have Jeremy. So welcome, Jeremy.
One day we all become crabs.
It's so good to have you here, Jeremy. That's a great point. One day we all just become crabs. Thank you.
It's excellent to be here. Thank you.
Good.
Thank you for joining us, Jeremy. Glad to have you.
I'm so excited to watch the Blair Witch Project with you. Did you know along the lines with the advertisement that Heather Donahue's mother received sympathy cards from people who believe that her daughter was actually dead or missing?
Really? Wow. No, I didn't know that.
Really?
That lesson sucks. For you, Heather. Come up with a stage name.
But effective.
Yeah, seriously. I am surprised, too, that they all use their actual – that they didn't get character names. Was the script completely improvised, by the way? I thought I read that somewhere.
The budget did not include creativity.
Well, I thought they just, like, gave them an idea of what to do and then didn't, like, write it out line for line for line. But I could be confusing that with a different found footage movie. I don't know. I thought I read that somewhere.
I wouldn't doubt it. Because this does feel like a college created documentary for a film class vibes. It's exactly what it is trying to be. It's weird.
Yeah.
Apparently, so the directors of the movie kept in touch with the actors through walkie talkies to make sure that they wouldn't get lost in the, like during all this.
Oh.
And they got lost three times.
Because so even in real life, looked real.
We'll get into this. I mean, there are good parts of this movie, I will say.
Yeah, there are.
We'll get into that. Yeah, so I guess there's nothing left to do but
To walk.
The Blair Witch.
Yes. Walk. Yes, she has a very distinctive walk. Exactly. Let's start.
She floats.
They all float down here, Georgie.
So, film starts off. It has the text on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
In October 1994, three student filmmakers disappeared in the woods near Burkittsville, Maryland, while shooting a documentary. A year later, their footage was found. And then this is what we that's how it introduces us to our – well, at first it opens on Heather.
Mm-hmm.
And she's kind of just – like someone's filming her and she's like, yeah, I'm ready to go. Hey, like it's very – the footage very much places this in a certain time. Like it's very grainy, non-HD footage. So anyone that wasn't born during this time is like, geez, what kind of crappy effects did they put on this film? That's just how they
– The answer is none. That's just what they used to look like. I will say, too, I've liked that now found footage films will usually – not all of them, but a lot of them will do the original found footage. But then they'll also do like interviews with fake – journalists or people around the town. I don't know. I feel like that adds to the story. So maybe my expectation of watching movies like that first also colored what I expected from this movie.
Yeah. All we have is what
is like just the footage. The
text said it's just the footage. So we have all that's all we have to go off of. We have to make inferences of like what's going on. So yeah, I do like the kind of contextual background information, like Hell House, where they were kind of interviewing people of like,
yeah.
What happened here? And, you know, people that were at the haunted house and they were talking about their experience. Like, I like that.
Yeah, because we don't actually learn the legend of the Blair Witch. Not really.
No. So Heather's thumbs up, ready to go. And she is basically saying that they're leaving for the woods. And she has all these books. They're like lore books of – she doesn't really explain them. They just look like – ominous books like witchcraft and stuff like that.
Yeah, so. Pretty much. Some light reading.
Yeah. So Joshua shows up on camera.
Mm-hmm.
He shows up with the camera that they're going to use. So they have two different cameras that they have. One's like a handheld and one's like a higher end camera. So he comes with that one and they're all, you know, Heather excited. Like, oh, okay, we got the equipment. Now we can go pick up Michael, who's the other, or Mike is what they call him. They go pick up the last member of the team here. This does feel like three students in the same class doing a group project of like, let's go film some stuff and we'll – yeah. They pick up Michael and then go to the store. And from what I understand, like, Heather knows Joshua, but they don't really know Mike that well because they kind of
– yeah.
It's not as like a buddy-buddy relationship between everyone with Mike.
Mm-mm. There was some tension pretty early on.
Yeah, like a new guy in the group.
It's interesting to watch how that tension morphs and changes throughout the movie. I thought they did that very well.
Yes, yes. So they go to the store. They get some groceries. This is where it starts cutting in like interviews with, mm-hmm. I assume, just town folk of Burkittsville.
Just locals.
Yeah. So there's a waitress. And I didn't write all these names down because these are kind of like throwaway interviews.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, okay. So the waitress, her name is Sandra Sanchez. So she must have been related to the writer, Eduardo. That's just my guess. So this very much feels like a, I don't know, get your brother to come in here and like yeah. play a part. Like a little bit part. Yeah. And so she's just kind of like, oh, yeah, like – I like heard about this Blair Witch thing. So they all kind of like mention Blair Witch, but they mm-hmm. barely any of them actually go into detail of what it is.
Yeah. It's just like, oh yeah, I've heard of that legend. You're like, okay. Did you want to tell us about the legend?
Please.
No. Okay.
Yep. So next they're like in a cemetery and they're getting the first shot of the documentary. And it really is just Heather talking about Burkittsville and like,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's a small town and like here's the graveyard. Here's where some people were buried. And she kind of is ominous about like, but some other things happened here. And like, we're going to go explore that. So it does not introduce what we're going into. It's very vague.
Yeah.
But she kind of talks about the history of the town,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of interesting. But so next scene, we just have some old dude talking about the Blair Witch legend. And it kind of is interspersed with other people that are interviewed, too. So it's switching between everyone.
Yeah.
Talking about, like, oh, I've heard of the Blair Witch thing. I think the old guy says kids started disappearing at some point. And so
winter of 1940.
Thank you. It was like 7 kids that were murdered by some guy.
Mm-hmm.
And what they said is just basically this guy had a house somewhere. And he took him into the basement and, like, murdered them.
But he said he'd bring them down 2 at a time. Yes. He'd make one of them face the corner while he murdered the other one because he couldn't stand like the eyes watching him.
Yeah.
Okay.
One guy mentions a quote, Mary Brown person.
Yeah.
And she's played by Patricia DeCou, DeCou.
Also, Mary so the group gets goes, a different name.
Yeah. She's the only one that has, it's weird. Like, she's the only one in the movie that really has like an actress name, mm-hmm. or is like a named person in the film, and then has a, you know, different name.
Yeah.
So they go and find her. The group goes and finds her to interview her. Mm-hmm. So they approach her, and she talks about apparently having an encounter with the Blair Witch. And she just kind of talks about like she was like laying in the forest, and then felt this presence, and then like this weird stuff happened to her, but it was really nothing.
Yeah, crazy. She's like, the witch kind of touched my arm and I felt an evil presence. It's like,
yeah.
All right, thanks, Mary. Stuff. Thanks for your time.
And that's it.
Yeah.
That's all it was. And then as they're driving away, they're all kind of like, oh, yeah, she's kind of crazy. Like, they don't believe her. They think she's nuts. Like, just like all the other town folk said about her, too. So,
yeah.
So next scene, they're at the hotel. Mm-hmm. They're celebrating the first day of shooting, which is, so far, it's only been one thing with Heather and then just a bunch of B-roll with interviews of the the residents. So I guess that's something, but
mm-hmm.
it seems a little preemptive. So they're like drinking and like, oh, next day is going to be a lot harder. We're going to have to.
Yeah.
Because they're going to hike that day. They're actually going to go look for some of this stuff.
Gross.
Hiking?
No, I like hiking. I just don't want to sleep outside.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, I probably don't want to anymore. Even though this happened quite a while ago. So
true.
Next morning, more interviewing residents about the legend. Mm-hmm. They're like switching between black and white and then color. I don't know. I think that what this is just like one camera has black and white and the other doesn't. That's the perspective.
Oh, so like, that makes sense.
That's yeah. They're like one's a higher end camera and then the other one just shoots in like lower res quality. So that I guess that kind of gives you the idea of like, not necessarily who's behind the camera, but like what camera they're using.
Yeah.
So now they're getting all their gear ready. They like park the car in the forest. They're just like in the middle of nowhere.
Wait, what? Sorry, I wanted to go back. Well, no, I wanted to go back to one of the interviews because
sure,
one of them that they got the day before was about those seven kids in the 1940s who disappeared, got murdered in that guy's house. But then another legend that they talked about during the interview on the day of the hike was in the late 1800s, a lady disappeared, Susan something. And then 3 days later, she came back talking about the Blair Witch. And you're like, so it's kind of like loosely fitted, but that's about the most we get.
Yeah. What this feels like is like the Blair Witch means a lot of things to a lot of different people. Yeah. Like one thinks it's like this guy murdering kids in the forest or in his house in the forest. The other is like they talk about a apparition that like floats on up. I think Mary even said that. Like it's she floated.
Her feet didn't touch the ground. Okay.
And then like you said, this lady comes back after spending time in the forest and then is like all spooked and stuff. So it's like a mixture of all these different stories together. So but we don't get a clear picture of what it actually is.
Right.
The legend.
There was one woman on the street that told her account in the movie, and she was telling them all about the Blair Witch. Turned out she is a random person that was not tied with the production, and they couldn't find her after the production to get her to sign a waiver.
Really?
Hmm.
This movie is so chaotic. That's crazy. It's
very chaotic.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. I didn't know that.
And to that point, like, the people they interview, like, one dude, like, they just, like, stick a camera in his face, and she's like, are you religious? And he's like, yes. And that's it. Yeah. That's the extent of the interview.
Oh, okay.
So, like, it's a part of me thinks, like, these were just, they literally were just random people. Wait,
did they just find randos?
But to that extent, like, some of the people that do talk more about, like, the Blair Witch legend, it's very convincing because they do just seem like normal people.
Mm-hmm.
Just on the street people, so.
Which added to the authenticity that they were trying to create around it. Like, this really happened.
Yeah. So, yeah. So now they've driven to the forest. They're in the middle of nowhere. They're getting all their gear out. Mm-hmm. So they have, like, hiking packs and stuff. They say something about going to the shack, which later we find it's the dude that murdered the kids. They're looking for his house or whatever.
His murder house.
But she also keeps mentioning a cemetery too. So it's kind of confusing what they're actually looking for.
Yeah. Well, and they also go to Coughlin Rock because there was like a sacrifice there too. So, which is fine again, but like there are movies that over explain to your audience. And then there are movies that are like, nah, you'll pick it up along the way. And I'm like,
this gives you like four different threads to follow and none of them resolve. And it's very infuriating.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the next scene is literally them encountering the little rock that you just mentioned. And they talk about how like these five guys were tied together and tortured. And then someone escaped and was able to get the sheriff and come back up. But all the bodies were gone. And like it smelled like death, but there was like no evidence of everything that just occurred.
Yeah.
So
like interview two fishermen that are hanging out there.
These guys are crazy. Like one guy's – this is where I'm like, I don't believe this shit. This guy's a stand-in. He's like a nerdy dude just like, so yeah, we just like – he's not selling it as a fisherman. He does not look like he knows what he's doing.
So he's just like – cast the line and throw it into the water. Hey, that's how I fish, all right? Shut up. I think the last time I went fishing, I was 12, so.
Well, good. Yeah, exactly. You didn't know what you're doing. Jesus.
It's true.
I was expecting some pushback there.
No, the other it's guy true. I don't know like, how to fish.
And this pair of fishermen, like one's the like nerdy dude, and the other guy's like a gruff guy that just doesn't want to talk.
He's a grizzled like, fisherman, a man of the land.
Yeah. Heather's like, oh, we're doing a documentary for the Blair Witch Project. Do you like agree to have your image on film? And he's like, what? He's like, does not understand what's going on.
Yeah.
But he kind of talks – he finally like later opens up and was like, yeah, I saw this apparition floating on the water out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the nerdy guy is like, what? Bullshit. That didn't happen. So they're like giving each other – giving each other shit. So it's kind of this funny
just a little exchange, back and forth.
Yeah. So it starts raining. Okay. Let me just preface this by saying this movie is so disjointed because normally in these movies, like it jumps scene to scene. So, like, one thing will happen to this group, and then you jump to the next scene, and, like, it's all happening concurrently. This is just footage ends, footage begins, and it's completely a different setting, scene.
Yes.
It could be daytime, nighttime. It's literally just picking up where they turn the camera back on. So it's
which would be fine, even if they just included like a little text on the screen for each part so that we as the audience could follow. But we're like
morning, day two or something. Yeah, like just a little bit. So now it's raining and they're kind of like begrudgingly setting up the tent because, you know, they don't want to be wet the whole time.
Yeah.
But again, like it ends. They set up the tent, go to sleep, and then it wakes. And the next scene is it's in the morning. And Joshua was talking about how he heard noises during the night. So this is kind of the first sign that like shit's going on. But that's really all they talk about. So Heather kind of admits at this, it kind of cuts again. And she admits that they got a little lost during the hike. But now she knows where they're at. She's very adamant that she knows where they're going and like what trail they need to get on and like how to hook up with that trail.
Which I will say, both with the creeping dread, like somebody heard something last night and like how that builds every night. And then the creeping dread of like, I know where we're going. No, we're lost. No, I know where we're going. They did that well. Like each part ramps up and it feels natural.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Absolutely. So, and to your point, the others are kind of, Joshua and Mike are getting kind of skeptical. Like, are you sure you know where you're going? Like they're questioning Heather and her directions. Cause she's talking about a trail, like cemetery trail. That's where the cemetery thing keeps coming in. It's like, okay, well, I guess you're going to a cemetery now. But she keeps saying that she knows where they're going and where they are and where the trail is. But again, there's a lot of cuts of like, you know, footage ends and then it starts back up again. And now Mike is now upset because he's pretty sure they're lost.
Which they are.
Yeah. But again, Heather is reassuring them that like, no, I know where we're going. They're following a map. So they have a map and a compass. Really only in the beginning, the map is mentioned. So they keep referencing the map, which again, people that were born before this time, you don't have a smartphone. You can't like GPS this shit. So like you do have to kind of know what you're doing.
Oh yeah. I would have died in those woods. There's no way. I can't read a map. I can't follow. I could maybe follow a compass, but.
The compass is a little bit, I think, easier to use.
Yeah.
But the map, you got to know where you're at. So. It shows them footage of them crossing a stream. They're like crossing a log and it's kind of hairy situation. They're all kind of tense and like walking across this because they're like loaded up. They have like 30, 40 pounds of gear on their back. So they almost fall in, but everything's good. Okay. So now it cuts to where they find a pile of rocks in a tree. They're like, it's like tethered into a tree with sticks. And Heather is trying to remember. She's kind of taken aback by this and trying to remember what Mary Brown said. And she's like, oh, man, if I only would have listened to what that crazy person was saying. So, like, the interview was just for sensationalism for the documentary.
It's a lot of symbols that they don't get explained. And we also, as the audience, don't really get explained except like, oh, no, symbols. Ominous, maybe? Probably. Uh-oh.
Yeah, I think the main thing is it just tells them, like, hey, animals didn't do this.
Right.
Like, some person somebody was here or this. Something was here. Stacking these rocks in a tree and like, you know, tying it up or whatever.
True. Watch, it's just a raccoon following them, like putting little piles of rocks together. And he's like, hee-hee, they'll never suspect.
His little stash for the winter.
Just a chaotic raccoon.
So next scene, it's night and they have a campfire and they like get the cameras out and like go back to the rocks at night. And they're kind of filming around and seeing like, oh, look, kind of exploring it a little bit. I think Mike like knocks over one of the – someone like stumbles into one of the
– it's Mike.
The rock piles. Yeah. So she's like, what are you doing? She's like trying to put it back in place, like being respectful for the rock pile, I guess.
Like, don't piss whatever made this off. And Mike's like, don't it's piss fine. The rock pile off.
So it cuts and then camera turns back on. Heather is yelling and they hear – this is night. They hear rocks getting knocked over and like kind of rustling. So there's sounds outside the tent that are kind of freaking them out. But that's all we get. It's very much a drip of horror. Like it's a little bit the first night, a little bit the second night. Like it continually builds, which is very much Paranormal Activity. Like it's the same thing with that.
Doesn't she go exploring that night or is it the next night?
Don't ask me to keep this in order because
I just have written down that she heard a noise and starts exploring at night and does that thing that drives me crazy where they go, hello, hello, like, bitch, shh, Stop it.
Do you think the raccoon
to know where you are?
Exactly.
At one point during the campfire scene, Josh decides to start singing the Gilligan's Island theme song.
Oh, yeah.
Which took a large portion of the budget from this movie.
Did it really?
Yes.
What a stupid thing to waste your money on.
That makes so much more sense of like 60 grand. Where the hell did that come from?
That's funny.
Really going to get the viewers in to watch the Blair Witch Project? A rehashing of the Gilligan's Island theme song. They'll be rushing there's no tomorrow.
They'll be slogging.
Good rendition of it.
That's funny.
Do you think this was like they started singing it and later on we're like, oh, fuck, we got to like pay for the rights. Like later on they didn't realize that was going to be a problem.
Kind of feels like it, because if you were thinking, you'd be like, so let's not blow most of our budget on the Gilligan's Island theme song.
I think so. I'll guarantee you to what Jeremy just said. They spent more on the Gilligan's Island rights to that song than they got paid as actors. Guaranteed.
Ooh, yeah, there's a high possibility of that.
So, next morning, Heather asked Josh and Mike what they think it was last night. Joshua is kind of joking around and is like, oh, I don't know. You know, just like kind of being a goofball. That's kind of his persona.
Yeah, he's more
Mike
shallow.
Is more upset. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's upset because Heather was like freaking him out that last night. And they were kind of giving him shit for it. So he's a little upset about that, I think.
Yeah, I think she was yelling at him for not joining her and Josh exploring. So I think they did explore the night before.
They kind of walked around a little bit. And then Mike's in the tent because he's
like,
I don't know if
I'm not going out there.
Deal with this shit.
Fair.
Yeah. So they kind of end up like concluding like maybe the locals are fucking with them, which is kind of – that's
maybe
honestly more terrifying than raccoons making rock piles.
Well –
Okay, so Heather says they're almost back to the car.
Yeah.
But Mike is pushing back and saying that they don't know where they're. So really they just walked around and filmed some like, – they didn't find what they were looking for.
No.
So it's weird that they're just kind of like – Heather's like, okay, time to turn around.
Yeah.
Because they don't really have anything for this documentary at this point.
We did it. Let's leave. Except we're lost.
Yeah. They're telling Heather to turn the – so she keeps filming. And this is kind of pissing Josh and Mike off, which, yes, I agree with this. And they're telling her to turn the camera off, and Heather refuses. She's like, no, I got to capture all this. It's like this is part of the process, you know.
Because she's recording, like, their fights or their little arguments and stuff, too. And they're like, this is just for the documentary. You don't need this stuff. And she's like, I need all of it. And she hawks so much. I mean, sometimes, like, when they were crossing the stream, and she's like, you got it. You got it. Just don't look down. Just keep going. You got it. You got it. And he's at one point like, shut the fuck up.
Well, to your point, Mike is getting pissed, and he starts yelling, just kind of yelling in the forest.
He does start yelling. Mike yells a lot.
He does. This is – okay. So, like, again, I was going to say, like, point out what this movie does well. It very much does well at ramping up the fact that they're kind of – becoming delirious and like not at this point yet, but like kind of losing their mind. They're losing their trust in Heather. They don't really have a leader. So the cohesion in the group is kind of breaking down.
Yeah. And it was flimsy to begin with.
Yeah. And to that point, they don't really know Mike. So he's doing all this like yelling and stuff, which to me seems out of character the way they met him because he seemed very calm.
Yeah.
But he's like kind of like going off on the deep end already.
Yeah. The group dynamic fracturing and everyone yelling at each other and not trusting each other as the longer they're out there, the less food they have is very realistic. So they did a good job on that.
So this part alone, I could see people in the theaters thinking this was a real thing. This could like – you could actually believe like, oh, shit, like shit is going south and like they're acting very well if this is acted. Like this seems real. So now it's night again. So obviously they didn't find the car. They didn't get back to the car. They are talking about – so they're kind of freaking out because this is the end of the weekend. They're talking about getting the deposit back on the camera and the equipment, which means that they borrowed it or rented it. And this was only supposed to last until that day, but they never got back to the car.
Yeah.
And Josh or Mike, I can't remember which one, even was like, I have to work the next day. Like, I have to – we have to – like, what
Mike
am I going to do? I have to work at 9 in the morning.
To work. Yeah. And Josh is freaking out because I think Josh is the one that rented the expensive camera.
Right. So
both dudes are freaking out, and Heather's trying to be like, it's okay, we'll figure it out, which I'm sure she's freaked out too. But if everyone else is freaking out, one of you has to be the one that's like, hey, it's okay. She's
trying to keep everyone together. Trying. It reminds me of, and just let me do some on the fly research here real quick.
On the fly research, baby.
It reminds me of Juno in The Descent. Where she's kind of the quote-unquote leader, keeping everyone together, bullshitting them and lying to them about the fact that she knows where she's going. She says she does, and she doesn't. It very much reminds me of that.
Sometimes leading a group means managing the panic.
Which this is – I mean, that's what she's doing because I think, like we find out later, she doesn't know where they're going. She doesn't
– No, not at all.
It's pretty clear that she's – just saying, go in this direction and keep going. Like, she doesn't know.
Yeah.
Next scene, it's night and they wake up again.
Hear a noise.
Yeah, hear a noise. So some noise, kind of the same noises as last night. The best way I can describe it is it sounds like someone's, like, throwing rocks against other rocks or, like, throwing rocks against trees or, like, hitting branches against trees. It's
yeah.
It's just it sounds like commotion. Something is happening.
Something's happening outside their tent.
Yeah, and they keep think they're hearing footsteps as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the next morning, so again, this is such a slow build because it's just,
yes,
you know, it shows the tension during the day and then the stuff that's freaking them out at night. And but it keeps doing this day after day. So the next morning, they find three piles of rocks, and the piles of rocks are like their tent is in the center of all those rocks.
Yeah, one pile for each person.
Exactly. And they're kind of thinking, like, what are the chances that we would just set our tent up and not notice these? So, like, Claire, Heather is thinking that they were built while they were asleep.
Yeah, exactly.
And they all want to leave at this point. They're ready to go. So Heather can't find the map now. And everyone's pissed. This is where things really start devolving.
Ooh, they are yelling. They're blaming each other.
Yep. So she kind of, again, pulls the whole and she's kind of like, Josh, you had to have, like, taken it out of my pocket. Like, you got to be fucking with me. Like, that's why there's a history between Heather and Josh, because she's clearly thinking, like, he's messing with her.
Yeah.
He's not. So that implies that this has happened before. Where Mike's kind of just on the sidelines, like, what is going on? Stop arguing. Like, let's go.
Let's go. Like, yeah.
So they end up – they agree to this to some extent, but it's more Heather. They decide to follow the creek, which, you know, would – you think would be the smart thing for all the water to go to its source.
All the water, yeah. Water, stars.
They also, at certain times, talk about people looking for them. So they've been gone longer than people think they should be back. Like Josh's girlfriend thinks he's supposed to be back that day or yesterday. And so they're like, well, they're going to start looking for us, or like they're going to notice we're gone and something's wrong.
Yeah, which I would assume means if they only packed for the 2 days, now on day three, they're going to be out of food.
Yeah, I don't know. It showed them getting groceries, but it didn't show a ton of food. So yeah, I can't imagine they have much to go off of right now.
Mm-mm.
So they're again crossing another body of water, a creek, and Josh falls in, and then it like cuts, and Mike's like laughing his ass off, but to the point where it's like kind of scary, like Joker laughing,
like hysterical laughter.
Yeah, and then the camera cuts and comes back on, and then we find out that Heather also fell in, you know.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not fell in, but it's not like deep water. But she got her shoes wet or whatever, so it's like uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And again, Mike thinks this is funny too. And Josh and Heather are not happy about that.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still pointing fingers about the map because they keep talking about it. And this is insane. Mike finally says, like, oh, you know what happened? As he's like laughing. I kicked the map into the creek. And I didn't say anything. I didn't want to say anything because the map wasn't doing anything for us. He's like delirious.
Yeah, he threw the map away yesterday.
Yeah.
Then Josh and Heather rightly start freaking out. Like Josh starts to fight Mike a little bit, like physically. Mm-hmm. And Heather is screaming bloody murder, which is great. Can you move your mouth away from the camera next time you scream that loud for that long, please?
I wish they would have had a little time at the end to balance the mic levels, you know, like before the found footage is found.
Maybe just a little bit.
Because holy shit, her fucking voice was so annoying. Like, her screaming is so annoying.
She has a great scream for horror movies. I just don't want to hear it the entire time.
In my ear, like directly in my ear.
In my ear.
And I think you had mentioned this, Sid. Like, I did not turn on captions. I should have, because holy shit. A lot of the time I was like, what are they talking about? I can't even hear what they're saying. But when I would turn it up, Heather would scream. And then I'd turn it back down. And then I'd turn it back up because I can't hear what the fuck they're saying. So it's a poor audio. But maybe that goes to the allure, or like the thought of like, oh, this is found footage and it's unedited.
The found footage of it all. Yeah.
So it helps.
But yeah, I had to turn on closed captioning so I could read what the hell they're saying. Because like you said, it's either screaming or whispering.
Yeah. It was rough. Yeah. So Josh and Mike kind of fight a little bit. And at this point, Heather demands the compass from Josh. And then they're kind of bickering over that of like, who should hold on to the compass? And it's like, just shut the fuck up and start walking, because like, you're losing daylight.
It doesn't matter, guys. Just keep going.
Next scene, it cuts to where they're stopped for some reason. I think it's just because they're desperate. They're kind of like out of energy and and just kind of like taking in like where they're at. Like, they're a day behind schedule and don't know where they're at, and
yeah,
we don't have as much food.
We don't have a map. Like, the reality of their situation is sinking in.
It's not good. So this part's pretty crazy. They next come upon a bunch of sticks that are tied up. And they're just hung in the trees. And there's this, like, ginormous stick effigy that kind of looks like a person with their arms and legs out.
Yeah.
It's definitely the, like, Blair Witch symbol. Like, when you see that, you're like, oh, Blair Witch. Like, that's the...
If you guys have seen any marketing for Blair Witch, you know it. It's like Jack said, it's two little sticks tied, so it looks like a man with his arms out, his legs spread wide, and then a little puff at the top.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is creepy. I mean, like, I just think, like, maybe this could have happened on, like, day two instead of four. Like, it just accelerate this a little bit.
Fair.
I know they're building the tension, but, like, man. So they're freaked out. Heather is, like, obsessed with filming this, which this is more than she thought she was going to get probably for the documentary. So, yeah, sure, it's some content, but, like,
it's actual content, but you need to keep going, which the guys are yelling at her. I probably would have yelled at her, too.
Sure. Well, it's like this is not the thing to be focusing on. Like, yeah, this is scary and interesting or whatever you want to call it, but, like, it's time to keep walking and keep going.
We need to go before the night falls.
Yeah. During this time, Mike is yelling for help, too. So, like you said, the guys are kind of screaming at her, too.
Yeah.
So now it's night again.
Mm-hmm.
And they decide not to make a fire, thinking that is what is, like, attracting everything to them.
Yeah.
So they're like, okay, we just won't make a fire. We'll just, like, set up a tent and, like, go to sleep. And Mike's even, like, turned the light off, too, like, from the camera, because he's paranoid about that.
Yeah.
And they wake up in the middle of the night, and they hear footsteps. They hear noises again, like, but this one gets more intense because there's, like, actually stuff brushing up against their tent, freaking them out.
It's getting closer. Well, in the closed captioning, it said animal noises and kid giggling.
Yeah. So at some point, they hear voices, and later on, Heather says, did you hear that kid scream? So, like, she's hearing some kind of baby or kid or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they, like, bolt out of the tent. They start running, which... I don't know what I would do in that situation, but that seems like a decision to just leave.
Right. I understand not wanting to stay in the tent because they're putting rocks around the tent. Like, the things are creeping closer to your tent. I get that. But then if you flee out into the night, aren't those things just going to follow you?
Right. Exactly. You're even more exposed than you were in the tent.
Right.
So they run, which this part is chaotic because this is like the definition of the shaky cam stuff. And this part is, like, rough to watch. Like, nausea-wise, it's like, oh, my gosh.
This movie was the original shaky cam. That is the reason I didn't watch this movie for decades. I heard how shaky the camera work was. I'm like, I think that's going to make me sick to my stomach.
Yeah, I mean, there's some parts where I'm just like, I need to, like, kind of, like, look off a little bit and scream to just kind of, like, ground myself. So
had one of my favorite details. So, in the Blair Witch, when they're running away from their tents, she screams, oh my God, what is that? What the fuck is that?
Oh, yeah.
And at that point, the camera was supposed to pan left so you could see a woman standing in the forest, but they forgot to pan left.
Okay, I wondered because she says that and then we don't see anything.
You don't get to see a damn thing.
That makes so much more sense.
It does. It's
that's funny.
But it's kind of interesting how, like,
standing in a white gown off screen for no reason.
Hey, I'm here.
My big moment.
Well, you know.
Poor lady.
That appearance would push the budget to $65,000. They didn't have that.
That's
kind of
true.
Money,
so. That's really funny.
But it's crazy because that almost lends that almost like works out for the movie's mysteriousness better. It's in its favor because you don't see it. Because to your point, Jeremy, like when they were running and she's like, "What the fuck is that?" I was like, "What? I didn't see it. Did I miss what they were looking at?"
Right.
Like,
same.
So to that point, like it was almost more – it was more mysterious because, like, they saw something that I didn't see. So clearly there's something following them. But
I just like that was an accident.
That's hilarious.
That's fucking funny.
That's hilarious. And it's like, could you not have just, like, backed up and done that scene again?
Like,
it feels like this was all
again.
One take, right?
It does. It does feel like it was one take, which, again, like you said, leads to the authenticity of it. But I don't want to watch it.
This would have been much better to see when, like, the movie came out because I think it would have been much more effective as being scary.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes. So they run. They run past the thing they should have been showing, but they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And they get to a point and they stop running and Mike's like, turn the light off or turn the – because the camera has a light. So he's obviously trying to, like, you know, like, let's not lead this stuff back to us.
Mm-hmm.
And Heather said something about, did you hear the baby screaming? And Mike's like, no. And he's like kind of like telling her to shut up.
Yeah.
So I guess they kind of just stood in this forest until the sun came up. I don't know how long it was. Yeah, which is – that's scary too.
Yeah.
They go back to the campsite, which – excuse me. You can't find your way back to your car, but you're able to, like, find the campsite again?
Yeah, right? They're like, oh, there it is.
Oh, shit. There's a tent. It looks like some of the stuff was stolen. So it seemed to target Josh, like it stole some of his stuff and then left like this slime everywhere.
Yeah.
Because they were like saying like, oh, look, there's water. And then like some – like I think Josh touches it and it's like slime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they took his whole pack.
Yeah. So they didn't really mess with Heather and Mike's stuff. But Josh is kind of – this is not good because, you know – either whether he had his own food, obviously he had his own sleeping bag and all this. Like, they took all that. They left the tent, though.
Slime was KY jelly.
Ew.
Why they brought that to the production, I don't know.
Right? They're like, we might need this.
God,
oh, let's use it
nasty.
For the movie. Yeah, no, that's what I meant. Obviously, you guys, don't make it weird.
The only goop they could have purchased? Seemed like a strange choice.
Fair.
Very strange choice. That's
I'll give him that. So Josh and Mike want Heather to turn the camera off again because she keeps filming this. This would drive me nuts. Like, get the camera. Like, at a certain point, this is not a documentary anymore. This is survival. Stop filming everything.
We're just trying to go home.
Yeah. So they kind of talk and they end up continuing. I mean, because what else do they have? What other option do they have at this point?
Mm-hmm.
So Josh is kind of off by himself, and Heather and Mike are talking, and they're talking about how Josh is kind of losing his shit because he's kind of – he seems like he's kind of losing his mind a little bit. He asks them for a cigarette, and they're both like, no, we ran out like 2 days ago. Like they – and he keeps asking for a cigarette.
Yes.
But again, Josh tries to get her to stop filming because it's grating on all of them.
Well, yeah. Like it's like you said, at a certain point – let's recognize the emergency of this situation and stop treating it like it's all just a fun documentary. Like, we're going to die out here if we can't figure out how to get home.
Yep. So Mike keeps shouting. And now Joshua is joining in. They're just like yelling for help at this point.
Yeah. Well, it did annoy me a little bit when Mike is like, just give Josh a minute. And Heather's like, we need to go. Give him a minute. We need to go. Give it. Girl, open your ears for 2 seconds and give him a fucking minute. God.
But at the same time, you need to go.
We need to go, but like they just – all three of them don't listen to each other because they all do it. It's not just her.
No. It, they all have their like character faults that are spotlighted during this entire thing. Like Heather is the leader, but really she's not able to keep everyone in check, and like her self-assurance is very threadbare at this point.
Yes.
So they come across a creek that looks like the same one they just passed. So they've been walking for like 12 all hours, day. 15 hours, yeah. all day. And Heather's just like, it can't be that. It can't. She's like freaking out. Like, it can't be the same creek. It can't be the same. Or they say log because it's a log that they crossed over. But they're like, it can't be the same log. Can't be the same log. And Heather kind of goes up to it and is like, it is the same log. And now she's like really freaking out. So they basically essentially walked in a circle and are back to where they were.
Ugh. That would be the worst fucking feeling.
Yeah. And their whole thing was to walk south, which if you have the compass, like that shouldn't be too difficult. You just follow the compass. But I don't know if they're like following the compass and the creek at the same time. I don't know. I'm not sure. But
well, so my question too is like if the witch or whatever it is following them, marking them, making these effigies, is she also fucking with them, making the compass wrong, making them go in the wrong direction?
Sure.
I don't know. There's some stories where like witches can make you walk on the wrong path or something.
I mean, it would make the most sense out of this because
they still lost the compass,
the map, and the compass, or they lost the map, have the compass, and you think you would be able to like Heather says, like if we just walk south, we're bound to hit something. So I don't. Depending on where they entered, like south could mean like they're going to go back to the town of where they came from, Burkittsville or whatever.
Well, because she even got lost with the map. So I think it's something supernatural fucking with them at this point, at least.
Well, and they even said – because like Heather was talking at the beginning when she was reassuring to both Mike and Josh. She's like, oh, we're just going to take the shortcut that meets up with the trail. So they were maybe on a trail at one point and then she decided like let's speed this up and like cut a path straight to the trail. So she knowingly and kind of like fucked them from the beginning because she was – being careless with where they were going.
So stay on the trail, which is also kind of like Juno from The Descent.
Yeah. Don't throw the map away or go to the right cave.
A lot of horror movies did take inspiration from this movie, even though we're shitting on it.
Well, I think a lot of movies after this refined what this one did. This might have laid the groundwork, but a lot of them refined this found footage trope or whatever you want to call it for the better. I mean, not to say those movies are perfect either, but like, seeing those movies first only shows how crude this one is, I think.
Yeah, that's fair.
So we are at – they walked in a circle all day. Mm-hmm. Now, okay, this is kind of funny. I mean, Heather is lost at this point. She's like freaking out, crying, emotional. And Josh is filming Heather and he's like, hey, why don't you just like act like some witch is following you and like – and causing all these problems and like just going on and on, antagonizing her, kind of like he felt she was to them when she wouldn't stop filming them. And she's pissed.
I get it in the beginning because she was being annoying about the camera and everyone is freaked out and broken down at this point. I get antagonizing her, but he just keeps going. She is crying. She's begging him to stop. Like Mike is telling him to stop. She's like, please just stop yelling at me. He does it for like 5-10 minutes. It was a hard watch.
Yeah. That's what makes this so convincing is like their fraying relationships are very real. Like that's how people would act.
Terrible to each other. Yeah. Which, like you said, I understand how you'd get to that point in that situation.
So I believe now it's night again or they're about to set up a tent and Mike says he'll stay up for the watch. So I guess they're agreeing to like one person's going to stay up. While the other two sleep and kind of keep an eye on things.
Just go in shifts.
But this is still part of the part where Josh is kind of emotionally torturing Heather. So now, next scene, it's at night in the tent. They kind of like apologize to each other for like how shitty they've been.
Which is also realistic because you'd be like, ooh, I did too much in that moment. Sorry.
Yeah.
Like we need to rely on each other to get out of here.
Exactly. You got to cooperate to get out of this. But they do like this is really fucked up. They start talking about food, which is not good. Like it's good for them.
I get it though.
I just want mom's mashed potatoes or whatever. And it's just like, man. So they must be out of food or very close to being out of food at this point.
I think they're out. Yeah.
All right. So the next morning, Heather is looking for Josh and he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
He left the tent and he left his gear too. So
yeah.
So Heather and Mike kind of talk about, like, Mike's kind of like, oh, just calm down. We'll wait. Maybe he went to go take a leak or something, and he's going to be back. Mm-hmm. We'll pack up all the stuff, and then, like, by that time, he'll be back. Well, that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
It's pretty quick how they decide to just leave or continue walking.
I think if it had been day one, they wouldn't. But, like, they're on day five, no food. They're lost as shit. They're like, well, we're going to keep going, and hopefully we find him. But I did like their conversation on how they decided which direction to go. They're talking about, like, Wizard of Oz, and they're like, well, let's go west. That's because that's where the witch is. And she's like, no, the Wicked Witch of the West was the bad one. He's like, all right, let's go east.
Yeah, they decided to go east. Just not a good way to decide where you're going when you're desperate. It's
funny, though.
So the next scene, I guess they've walked pretty much all day. There's like a scene of them, like Mike's like rocking back and forth, sitting in the grass, and she's kind of filming him. And then later in the day, he's sitting and they kind of like huddle together and are like rocking back and forth. So like, shit's not good. Like it's pretty rough right now.
Yeah, he like found a loose cigarette at the bottom of his bag, and they just kind of sit and smoke for a little bit. Like it's like Jack said, they're fracturing and.
Yeah. So the next scene, they are setting up the tent. So it must be night again, or close to night. Mm-hmm. Close enough to night that they realize they can't walk any further.
Yeah.
And they are talking about food again. So mm-hmm. Torturing themselves a little bit more. Then it's night, and Heather hears sounds again. They hear Josh screaming or yelling or moaning or something, or they think it's him. Mm-hmm. So they're yelling for him. They're screaming his name, Josh, which, god damn, this was so rough, so annoying. Yeah, Jesus.
Over and over and over.
And they can't tell where it's coming from because it sounds like, much like all the activity that happens at night, it sounds like it's all around them. So they can't, like, pinpoint where it's coming from. Mm-hmm. So they give up looking for Josh, and they go back in the tent, and Heather kind of desperately says, like, ask Mike not to go to sleep. So essentially, I intoned that they stayed up all night.
Yeah, because I think the fear is now, like, if whenever we go to sleep, something bad happens. So let's just stay awake. So now they're not eating or sleeping. Uh-oh.
This is not a good recipe for sanity. Mm-hmm. The next morning, there's a bundle of sticks outside their tent. Mm-hmm. And it looks like it's tied with, like, a plaid strip, which I was immediately like, oh, that looks like Josh's shirt or something.
Sure does.
So Mike and Heather are not doing well mentally.
No.
I don't know. It seems like they're kind of barely communicating about what happened last night and, like, them both, quote unquote, hallucinating Josh screaming. Mm-hmm. But Heather ends up, like, going back to the sticks, the bundle of sticks, unwraps it, and finds wrapped in more plaid stripping, like, it's a bunch of teeth.
Oh, it's teeth. Okay.
That's what I thought. Because they were big.
I saw the plaid wrapping, which is Josh's shirt. There's a ton of blood on it. And then I thought they were fingers. I was like, what the fuck is that? It's again, teeth. Okay.
With this movie, you don't know what the fuck they're trying to tell you.
The teeth is from Eduardo Sanchez's mouth. His dentist had taken them out and he used them for the production. One of the teeth is also Lisa Danes, who is in charge of casting for the film.
Gross. That's what? Actual human teeth that they use?
It's the producer and casting director's actual teeth.
That's disgusting.
Okay.
They're saving money every way they can.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you points for creativity. Good job.
Just get so some frugal. Fake teeth. What the fuck? Oh,
just,
my
like,
God.
Buy some Vienna sausages and make them look like finger joints.
Yes. Yes. Those were some big fucking teeth. I guess
big old horse teeth. I guess
I really don't see the root of teeth, but the root was so like, gross. Damn, it's huge. But okay, what the fuck? I think we need to investigate the fucking writers. Like what is wrong with you? You're gonna pull your teeth out and use them in the fucking film.
Like it'll be great
to promote Discord during this part of the film. They also started withholding food from the actors.
Mm. Oh.
So they really do.
They
kind of tortured them.
They tortured psychologically.
A little bit,
actually, physically. Well.
Weren't they like making noises outside their tent too at night without like letting the actors know that was going to happen?
the rustling of their tent was not a planned part of the film. It was something they decided would be creepy.
I thought I read that somewhere. So they are just kind of fucking with them throughout the whole
this
movie.
This is like guerrilla filmmaking.
Seriously.
Now, Sid, this kind of goes back to your thing. Because like we talked about like, I think it was The Exorcist. Mm-hmm. Where like the director was not nice to some of the members of the cast. Mm-hmm. And like kind of fucked with them emotionally. And so how do you feel about hearing this after Jeremy kind of gave us this information?
I'd say this counts because it's one thing if they know that that's what they're going to get signed up for. But it's another thing to not to be a douchey theater kid for just one second. But like you have to put a lot of trust in your director because they're going to ask a lot from you emotionally to get to the scene you need to get to. And you have to be able to trust and be vulnerable in that moment. So to do that and then get fucked with is a really shitty place to put somebody. I don't like it. I don't think it's good producermanship, which is definitely a word.
I like it.
Thank you.
It does. It's going to get the reaction
that
maybe the filmmakers want. So there is, I guess you could say like, this is the, that's why this feels authentic. Like it very much is like, they seem annoyed. They seem pissed scared. Off at each other.
Yeah.
They seem scared. They seem lost. They seem hungry. Like all that is adding up.
Yeah. Which again, also, if you're going to get well compensated for it, but it sounds like maybe they weren't. So.
I mean, how much do you think they paid the dentist to pull the teeth? Or was it like a college of dentistry?
I just picture him like tying a string around his tooth and he's like, all right, now shut the door really hard.
They're just like in the forest, like, okay, I'm going to tie this to my tooth and we're going to throw the rope over and like tie a branch to it and just like, boom, God. Just like drop it.
Ends up like yanking out the bottom half of his jaw.
Well, even better, like when they're like, all right, cut. He just has like no teeth. He's like, that's a good one.
Good job.
That's a good one, actors. Yeah. Good one, Heather. It's like toothless grin. Like, oh my God, that's terrifying.
Anyways.
So that knowing that changes like a lot of this of like, damn, this is insane. Okay, I'm not doing well mentally.
So she finds the teeth, freaks out, decides not to tell Mike, and like is washing her hands off in the stream.
She doesn't tell Mike.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I mean, again, like this whole time she's been trying to like keep everyone's emotions in check and like following her and like being a strong leader. I mean, maybe this plays into that of like, I'm not going to tell Mike that I literally found Josh's teeth.
Yeah. Well, it also goes back to your point that she and Josh seem to know each other and Mike is a newcomer. So
true.
There's also, so I mean, there's like, a lack of trust.
Yeah. So yeah, at this point, as she's like washing her hands, she's putting on gloves. Mike's like, what's going on? Like she's freaking out.
Yeah.
So clearly something's wrong. Mike doesn't really push it, but there's something wrong.
Yeah. She's like, I'm just hungry and tired while she's shaking and putting gloves on and crying. And he's like, okay.
Yeah. So they continue walking. Mm-hmm. It's night again.
Excuse me. You forgot the part where they're sitting on the creek bed and Mike eats a leaf. It's very important. Important enough that she mentions it.
This situation was so traumatic, Mike became a vegetarian. Mm.
True. Maybe even a vegan. He's down to raw veggies and foliage.
I mean, if you end up being able to eat leaves, hey, you're going to live in the forest. That's the place to
be. You'll be great.
Yeah, so he eats a leaf. Mm-hmm. He commits sin on Canada's maple leaf or whatever. So it's night again, and this is like the iconic, because I recognize this from like, honestly, I hate to say it, Sid. I think it was a scary movie or something, but they spoofed this. It's been parodied
so many times. Yeah.
So it's Heather filming herself, and she is speaking to the camera, and she's addressing her mom, Josh's mom, Mike's mom, like their family, and basically apologizing and saying sorry, like thinking like this tape is going to be found later.
Yeah.
And she basically blames herself for getting everyone into the situation and like the way it turned out.
Which would be fine.
Crying and sniffling and
if she weren't holding the camera, so that you can see directly up her fucking nose, a little bit of her eyes, but it's mostly up her nose. And in her right nostril, there is a booger that just hangs out there for a while until she really starts crying and then just wet snot everywhere. I had to look away. It was disgusting. Like, girl, move the camera.
I'd rather see some fucking director's teeth than the snot.
Seriously. Girl, stop. Fuck. I actually did end up fast forwarding it a little bit. I'm like, I can't with this.
It was kind of long, too.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, towards the end of that little monologue, she's like, I'm afraid to close my eyes and to keep my eyes open. And she keeps like looking around like something's near her. So, you know, she is freaked out. I don't know what Mike's doing. Sleeping like a baby, maybe.
Mike's like, oh, fuck it. It's time to sleep.
I'm so tired. That leaf really hit the spot.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, of course, she hears something, as you're wont to do at night in the forest.
Mm-hmm.
They wake up and they hear Josh again, like screaming.
Yep.
So they walk into the woods, kind of aimlessly. Mm-hmm. They're following who they think is Josh, but I don't think they really know.
Yeah.
Like where it's coming from. But they just kind of keep walking, and then they find a house.
Mm-hmm.
Like a trashed, derelict house. Like it's fallen apart in the middle of the woods.
Mm-hmm.
This sounds kind of similar to the urban legend of the guy that murdered the kids in the woods in his house.
Sure does. I just wish we would have gotten here 45 minutes ago.
In daylight. I want to see this house in daylight. Like it's hard to see anything because you got like the night vision.
Well, I just want to see more of the house, more of the legend, more of Jesus, anything else.
So Mike goes in to the house. He's pretty fearless at this point. I mean, he's trying to find Josh.
Yeah, I think it's a fuck it. What do we have to lose? Plus, they do keep hearing Josh screaming. But like Jack said, it feels like it's coming from everywhere.
So Mike goes in, but Heather is like afraid too. She's like standing outside the house, like screaming Mike's name because I don't think she wants to go in there.
Yeah, which is fair.
But she eventually does. She kind of like reluctantly comes in and because she doesn't want to be left outside alone, so she goes in to basically find Mike.
Mm-hmm.
So they keep hearing this Joshua screaming, and they go upstairs, and there's like little kids' handprints on the wall, like everywhere.
Yeah, which was creepy and interesting, and that's what I meant with my point of like I wanted more of that kind of stuff because that was eerie. Like the last 5 minutes of this are good and eerie. And
anyways. And it's really dark, so you can't tell, but I assume that's probably blood that the handprints were made in.
I think so, yeah.
You can also see in the landing of the stairs, there's a plaid shirt. It looks like Josh's shirt. So they don't say anything about that, but I clocked that shit.
Yeah.
So they get to the top of the house and look in the rooms. They can't find him. They keep hearing screaming, so Mike's like, he's downstairs! And he like just rushes downstairs, leaving Heather behind upstairs. Yeah. So he goes all the way to the basement, and he's still looking for Josh.
Mm-hmm.
And the camera just falls. Like he got hit on the head or something.
Yeah.
Or falls down.
Which would be fine if we didn't have to listen to Heather scream for 5 minutes straight.
Yeah. So Heather screams, and she's making her way down. I believe it gets a little confusing here about what's going on. I think it's Heather's point of view. As she's screaming, but the screaming is coming from off camera, so it's not like right by my ear like it has been in this movie.
Right,
her voice. So it almost makes me think of like maybe the person that hit Mike is the one carrying the camera, and it's their POV.
Could be, because it felt like when they were talking about we'd bring two kids down to the basement, one standing in the corner, and one gets killed because he doesn't want the person to watch them. But we don't see it. We just see the camera looking at dirt and screaming.
Well, it pans over and we see someone standing in the corner looking to the corner. And I believe that's Mike.
Oh, so, did I miss that? Did I just look away because I was so irritated? I missed it. I was looking that was for like, it.
That's where I got you. I was like, because like nothing has happened. And I'm like, oh, I kind of like got chills at that point. Like, oh shit, like I actually see something. Kind of like if you would have seen the woman in white when you were supposed to, when the Q was there. So, it pans and it shows, I believe, Mike standing facing the corner. And then the camera just falls and hits the ground.
Okay.
But it's very up to interpretation of what actually how this ended. It's So, again, a lot of, like, buildup too little payoff. That's what I didn't care about this movie. It's like, what the fuck? Like, give me something more at the end. Like,
yeah, which because the end is creepy. So like, go with that. Like, let's see more of that. But maybe again, maybe they didn't have the budget since they blew it all on Gilligan Island theme song.
Oh my God. That'd be funny if those movies like another 30 minutes, which breaks my heart.
They're like, oh, actually, we just ran out of money.
It'd be much more resolved than it was. So this movie, I'm sure if you go to you saw all the hype online, you're like, what is this shit? Like, they're actually going to release footage of like people dying in movie theaters. You go see it with a bunch of friends and like, this movie is so dark. Like, I would say you probably only see 75% of what's on screen. Other times it's like so dark, you can't see anything. And the audio is terrible.
Yeah.
So I think just like the fact that it doesn't show things, it's left up to your imagination. That's what's scary about this.
Well, yeah, and it also gave, since I know there's at least one sequel, it gave them plenty of room to kind of play and expand and like make the next one into what they want. I haven't seen the next one, but
maybe we'll do it at some point.
I was going to tell you this. I've gotten a few requests for us to do sequels. So
yeah, we probably should. I mean, I have too, but it's kind of this thing of like, which ones do we pick? That's kind of the trouble.
Yeah. Well, if y'all want us to do sequels, let us know which ones.
Yeah. And you can let us know at Final Femme Podcast on Instagram or finalfempodcast@gmail.com.
Thank you, Jack. Good job.
Fucking professional here.
Mm-hmm.
This is only number 49.
It is 49.
It is? Damn.
Yeah. Pretty sure our next one is our 50th episode.
Damn, she old.
Okay. Rude. Rude, Jack.
Damn, he old. Sorry. Old Balls Podcast.
Anyways.
Yeah. Anyways. So, Sid, I'm sure Heather's screaming and snorting snot in the heavens. What would you like for her to drink?
That is gross.
Yeah.
Well, I found something on thedrunkenmoogle.com.
The drunken what?
Moogle. Moogle. Moogle.
All right.
I don't know. But it's called the Black Hills Legend, and then parentheses it says the Blair Witch Project cocktail, so we're going to go with it. It is 1/2 ounce of absinthe, 2 ounces of mezcal tequila, 1 ounce of St. Elizabeth Allspice Dram, 2 dashes of...
This sounds terrible so far. Please keep going.
2 dashes of bitters and rosemary sprig for garnish.
Is it even legal to mix tequila and absinthe? That seems insane.
I don't think I would drink this.
No.
I feel like it would have me seeing people in the woods. I think that's a good idea, but
go disappear in the woods. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Jesus.
What about you, Jack?
Well, I don't know if mine's any better, but like, fuck, that was rough.
Yeah.
What I should have picked is just a glass full of dry ice. There's actually nothing in there, and you don't get any substance. You don't get any reward payoff from it. But I ended up picking a drink.
You have to like stand in the corner while you drink your glass of ice.
Yeah, like a bad boy, dunce hat and everything. I picked a drink called the Forest Cocktail. It's from caramelberry.com, and it is 3/4 ounce elderberry syrup, 3/4 ounce lemon juice, and 2 ounces of rye whiskey.
Ooh,
you shake it in
good.
A cocktail shaker. Yeah. You serve it in a rocks glass with one ice cube. That's fucking, you need more than
rock.
That. Garnish with a forest sprig, that could be anything. A forest sprig, a branch.
Yeah, leaf that Mike was eating earlier.
Yeah, maple leaf, or you tie a bunch of sticks together and shove it in your drink.
Or someone's teeth from production, you know, whatever.
And that's how you garnish the rim.
Gross.
Make that terrible, like, gross. Glass against nails on chalkboard.
Oh, that is foul.
I can't believe that fact. Jeremy, thank you for – we'll have to have you back.
Yeah, thank you for all
because
these
– Because the facts that you just
– There's so much good details that are left unsaid.
True.
And sometimes that's probably better.
Oh, and then a year later, they tore the house down.
Really? The creepy house?
Yeah, 2000, the house was demolished.
So, okay. I mean, obviously that house existed. They did not build this house for the movie. Like, that wasn't actually, like, A house that was just in the woods.
1800s and left abandoned.
What the fuck? It really was, has been there that long?
Yes.
Oh, holy cats. Well, then if it's going
to
be...
to try and keep it freestanding for the fans of the film.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. No, don't. No, no, no.
They said no and tore it down.
I like how Jack is like, no. And I'm like, yeah, keep it up.
It's haunted as shit. No.
I guess I'd make them
like, you're
going
to make a shrine to this movie. Yeah, exactly. And then someone's going to hurt in there and like...
try to sue you.
Yeah. I took my baby there and they put their handprints
in. I took my baby there.
Asbestos.
I murdered my baby there. God.
Couldn't find any peaceful places to sit in the corner.
True. All the corners are taken by dead kids. God.
Wow.
Anyways.
We went in a direction.
Tune in next.
Okay. People. Audience. So we're going to be a little, we're going to uplift this for next time.
Don't tell them it's a surprise.
Okay. So we're going to watch a movie.
Yes.
You got to tune in, kids.
It's our 50th episode. We can't just tell you. It's true. A surprise.
We do have a little chomps coming out. So we'll be talking to you about life and our interests. Mm-hmm. But after that will be our 50th episode, our true 50th episode.
Yeah, we're not counting.
You just have to wait and see.
We're not counting our chompers episodes when we say this is episode 49 or episode 50, in case some of you like to count along. So
don't count.
Don't do it.
Just don't do it. Our math doesn't add up. All right. Well, I guess it'll be a surprise then, people.
Surprise!
What we're going to watch next. But we will see you next time.
Bye.
Final Fun Podcast. Goodbye, everyone.